סליחה, יש לי משהו בשבילך. רציתי את החיים, אז תשכח, אני שאני לא הבאתי את זה, זה ברוך שם יש לך. Last week, we started reading the Mishnah again, right? And the Gemara, we read the Mishnah, the Gemara, right? And we read the Rashi's interpretation to the Gemara. Let's look inside the Gemara again. Okay, let's look at one page and source to page number 6. Okay, so let's now summarize very briefly what we saw in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, right? Ve'eli yotzot shelo b'ktuba, who goes out without a ktuba, who forfeits a ktuba because of misaction. Ha'overet avdat Moshe v'yudit, a woman who violates either the laws of Moshe, which are biblical commandments as we saw in the Mishnah, or dat yehudit, that indeed are the customs that the daughters of Israel accept upon themselves. Okay? Rashi said these are customs of modesty the daughters accept upon themselves, and therefore, because as customs of binding on the binding on Klal Yisrael. Now, the Gemara then gives an example, as in the Mishnah, then it gives an example of what is dat yehudit, what are these customs, that a woman should walk with her hair uncovered. So the Gemara asks, okay, we're now back in the Gemara, two lines from the bottom. Page 6, two lines from the bottom. So the Gemara asks, Ve'ezo hi dat yehudit, what is dat yehudit? Yotz'ah v'rosha pa'ua. The Gemara says, why did you say that going with your hair uncovered? Yotz'ah v'rosha pa'ua, that's only dat yehudit, that's only a custom of modesty the Jewish women accept upon themselves. Rosha pa'ua doraitei, it's biblical. There's a biblical source for it. Dichtivur is written, Ufara et Roshi Isha, that the Kohen would, as part of the Sota service, uncover the hair of the Sota, of the suspected adulteress. Vitana Duvei Rabbi Shmuel, and the house of Rabbi Shmuel learned from Azhara. From here we see a warning. The Benogius order to the daughters of Israel, Shalo Yetzu B'Fuah Vosh, that you shouldn't go out with the hair uncovered. Fuah Vosh. Now, let me just ask you a question. To violate the biblical, now let's continue, I'm sorry, let's continue on. So the Gemara says, no question, why? You're right, there's really an element of Doraita, there's an element of custom. Doraita, Kalta Shakadam. Doraita, on the next page, a wicker basket with holes and everything on top of her head, which she carries. I don't know if you've ever seen these Arab women. They wear like a square box, like a pillbox hat, right? And on top of that, they put the weight to level it on their head. So if she's wearing a little pillbox hat made of straw like that, that's good enough to fulfill the biblical obligation. Dat Yehudit, afilu kalta nami aser. Kalta is not enough. How much does she have to wear? The Gemara doesn't say. But it's clear that we're going to have to learn from other sources. But kalta is not good enough. Okay? Let me ask you something. Biblically, according to the Gemara's analysis now, in order for her to violate Dat Moshe, how much of her hair has to be uncovered? What? All of it. Why do you say so? Why do you say all of it?
Because if she has any of it covered by school basket, whatever, then she's okay, then it's only done to the
table. Right, now, one could argue, and there are poskim who do argue, especially the off the, see, when it comes to the left, you never say extreme. The extreme right, right? When you're off to the right, the extreme right, many of them say that if any hair is uncovered, kalta means their whole head was covered. Okay, that's how the extreme right will learn, and I've had very lengthy correspondence with Otzar Poskim about this, because they that's it's a collection of writings, and they cite several responses which suggest that even Doraita, it says Kalta, but Kalta covered essentially the whole egg. You could see it a whole through, you could see it, but that's not the consensus. That's clearly not right. Because first of all, it says Ufaraho Shisha, right, by the Sota? I'll read you a Rambam in a second. In fact, let me read you the Rambam.
Was that custom of the Jews of all the...
No, I'm talking about biblically. Before
back.
The custom, no. That was a biblical obligation that had to be covered. And what? How are we going to know how much you have to uncover here? We learned from Farah or Shisha, it was done, right? It says to uncover, what did they do by the color? Right? What was it that they did to demonstrate what she they covered her whole head? Let me just read you what the Rambam says. The Rambam says that when she, I'm trying to find the Rambam here, the language of the Rambam, because we'll come back to the Rambam at a slightly different, let me read you what the Rambam says. Rambam says that she comes into the Kodesh Kodeshim, Vihi omeret b'nehem, v'lo redid, not a redid, and a redid is a veil, a face veil that covered her head and her face. Ubalam with pachat, and then he for the covering. Elav of gadeh, she stands there with her clothing. V'kipa shel rosha, a box that's on her head. Kamoshi shabatoch beit, as a woman would dress in her house. I'll talk about this in a second. That last sentence is really problematic. But she's wearing a kippa, something something on her head. She's not wearing a mit pachat. She's not wearing. So she's standing there, and what do they do? Is she pua rosh at that time? No, not yet. Then the Kohen comes along and does what? He uncovers her hair and then dishevels her, then does out if she her hair is unlocks. He undoes the locks. At that time when he uncovers her hair, she's puat rosh. So you see that even some hair might have been shown. It's not until her hair is completely uncovered that she violates. Let me read you the language from the Encyclopedia Talmudit. Welcome. Let's read you from the second Encyclopedia Talmudit. This is under second to tell you it under Dat Yehudit, it says it's fine. Priyat Rosh, Shehu Gilui Seya Rosha. Afa pi shemin ha-Torah, ein ha-Isur, ela kshi yotza l'rshut ha-Rabim, kishe Seya Rosha megula legamre. That is to violate the biblical obligation of Rosh Isha, if her hair is completely uncovered, then she writes the biblical obligation. But some of it is covered. If she's wearing the equivalent of a kippah suga or a doily or something on her head, right? Then she hasn't violated the farah rosh isha. Okay, is that clear? So we, because that means any minimal obligation. If a woman were to wear a band on her head, she would no longer be violating that biblical obligation. It has nothing to do with seir b'sheir, it has nothing to do with sexual distraction. Her head, hair has to be minimally covered. That's what it says. And if you look in the Tefillah of Yisrael's commentary on the Mishnah, he says the same thing. That Dat Moshe, to violate Dat Moshe, you have to have your hair completely uncovered. Gilui Rosh, Priyat HaRosh. Hair is completely uncovered. Doesn't mean partially showing, it means completely uncovered. Tak Yehudit says that even if you have a cover on your head, that's not enough. You got to cover the whole head, you have to wear a face veil, as the Rambam says. Okay. Now.
The language here is very strange because you're talking about violating Rosh Hashanah. But there is no. This
but where
is,
you.
It sounds like a lotase when you say
that. Wait a second. And that's right. That we're talking about. That's what we learned last week, how Rav Moshe Feinstein learned the two answers in Rashi. How do we learn that a woman has to have her hair covered? From the fact that the Torah says that you completely uncover her hair. Means at the point, if she would come in with some hair showing, that's still not enough. The Kohen has to completely uncover her hair. So from there I learn, from the fact that she has completely uncovered her hair, that's the warning to Bnei Yisrael that they shouldn't walk around that way. Which means what? How should they walk around? What can you learn from that? You can learn from it. Is that if your hair is partially covered, she hasn't left.
Very strange mitzvah, it's a mitzvah. Because it's there's the language.
Now you're getting into a different technicality. Let's not worry about that technicality. That's what we did at the end of the Moshe Feinstein last week. Let's get into the question of what is the essence of the mitzvah. How much has to be uncovered before before you violate the biblical obligation, because it's going to be very relevant. Halacha lemaaseh.
Even using the word violate, I'm saying that's the problem.
Violate to not have to
fulfill.
Violate it if it's a thou shalt not. It's you have to fulfill the obligation to cover your head. If that the obligation to cover your head does not require complete covering. The farav for covering your own for farav or shishal. You mean that even partial covering fulfills the obligation. That's it. Okay. Now, question is, how do we learn it out from sometimes? So therefore, that's what we saw last week. Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein said there are two answers, there are two explanations in Rashi. Let's see those explanations again, because we're going to come back to it right now. Rashi, and again on page 6 on the right hand side. On the right hand side in the Rashi. Okay? In the Rashi, where the Rashi script is, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines. 6 lines from on the right hand side, Rashi. In this column, up to 6 lines, it says, Azhara. Right? In Rashi, right? Everybody with me? Azhara. So Rashi says, how do we learn that a woman, is obligated to cover her hair? So Rashi says, Mida Abdina Lahachi, Linavla, since we do this, in order to shame her, mida keneged mida, measure for measure, kemosh, to expose what she did, kemosh asta lehitnaot al bo'ala, just as she violated to glorify herself in front of her lover, mechlal d'aser. From here we see it's aser. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, mechlal d'aser. What is Rashi? How does Rav Moshe Feinstein understand Rashi? The Rashi understands that we're reenacting the violation that she did. That is, that the obligation for a woman to cover her hair stems from a thou shalt not. You shall not go with your hair uncovered. So the thou shalt not, according to the first interpretation of Rashi. Mechlal d'aser, it's asur to go with your hair exposed. Inami, second interpretation says Rashi, midichtiv ufara, since it says that the kohen should uncover her hair, mechlal, from this we can derive, that that time she wasn't with her hair uncovered. Shema Mina, from here we learn, Ein derav benot Yisrael, that say, what those Jewish girls don't go out with their hair uncovered. Jewish girls cover their hair. That's why when she came to the Beit Hamikdash, her hair was covered. So therefore, we uncover her hair. Now, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, in the second interpretation, this is now a positive obligation. Jewish girls don't go with their hair covered. Jewish girls go with their hair covered. There's an obligation, a positive, thou shalt not. The Jewish girl, married women, should cover their hair. And Rashi says, v'chein ikar, and that is the ikar of interpretation. That's the fact. You see that the Jewish women cover their hair.
But
what
is it? Does that mean not married as well?
But
no,
no, just fail. Yes. That, according to most, means marriage. Okay, because the Gemara says, "Ein lo yinach the batla b'mavinu yoshev tachet ba'ala." The Benoit Yisrael means Jewish. This is how married Jewish. This means marriage. I don't think you should. I'm not saying that's not above a possibility of interpretation. You don't have to work through not only this Gemara but several other Gemara and sources. I'm trying to duck. Because what you're saying is not trivial. It's probably, we saw this before, the Magen Avraham, Halalim, the Shulchan Aruch, it's very complicated. So let's not get into that morass. Okay, so says Rav Moshe Feinstein, this is how we finished up last week. We have two interpretations. One interpretation is that thou shalt not. One interpretation is that thou shalt, which you have the obligation to cover your hair. From this we learn that you can't go with your hair uncovered. It's the same thing, but it's the source. If I say, for instance, the classic example is, the Kohen Gadol is obligated to marry a virgin. It says, Ish, Isha b'ftuleha yikach. Special rule by a Kohen Gadol. He's got to marry, he's marrying for the first time, or he's marrying a woman, his wife that he lived with until that time, living in a bed, you're right. But he's not coming to marry a new wife, or an additional wife, he lived with her. He's got to marry a virgin. That's a special rule by a Kohen Gadol. He's not a Kohen Gadol, he has different rules. And if he marries a non-virgin, he's violated the fulfillment of an essay, right? one who doesn't, a male who doesn't circumcise himself. He hasn't violated any thou shalt not. He's only violated the obligation to circumcise. A couple who willfully decides not to have children have violated the mitzvah per revu. They violate, they've not done any action of violation, but they have not fulfilled the mitzvah. Right? Does a kohen gadol have an obligation to get married?
To marry women.
He has an obligation, no, he asked me something. Does he have an obligation? If he's married, he has to marry a virgin.
No,
he
should have an obligation to marry. That's what you're agreeing to.
No, the isha, tulei, yikach, then no. It means if he marries, he's got to marry a virgin. Kohen gadol, though, has to be married. There's rules about it. You can't go into the kohen, kodesh kodeshim unmarried. That's the second rule. You can't go in, that Gemara says, if you, it says if he has to have a second wife, he has the first one, then of course they have a double son. You can't go in and plead for Klal Yisrael and not have some, and not have anybody plead at home for it. That's a question of sensitivity. You can't be a leader without understanding the troubles that Tzoros possesses. You don't have Tzoros to prove that. That was the joke waiting to be said. It was just waiting to be said. I was, no, but you understand. I mean, the halacha is you shouldn't daven for the Kol Yom Kippur until you have children, until you have pronounced the problems. That'll be another bus, because you want to daven with kavanah, you have to know what to daven for. You have to have experience. These are experiential. There's a certain thing when it comes with life. Okay. I quoted Mark Twain on this, right? Very often. Mark Twain said, when I was 17, I thought my father didn't know of a wit. And when I was 27, I was astounded how much my father had learned in 10 years. It's a life experiential. Okay, now. So wait a second. That's Rav Moshe Feinstein's interpretation. And it has all sorts of implications. Implications about, because if it's a thou shalt not, then the rules are that if, in order to not to violate a thou shalt not, I have to spend all my money. But as if I'm being under duress, the chazer, if I can buy my way out, I can spend all my wealth to buy my way out, I can buy my way out, being chazer. Right? That's under duress. There's a whole question of pikuach nefesh, it's a slightly different, those are different rules, I don't want to get into it. But if it's a thou shalt, only a fifth of my wealth. In order to fulfill, it means if I can't buy, when I talk about the esrog, if the esrog runs more than a fifth of my wealth, then I don't have to fulfill it. And the question becomes, what happens if a woman, because she won't be able, if she covers her hair, she'll lose her job. How far does she have to go to be willing to lose her job? If Moshe says that a married woman, suffek, if it's only an almana or a grusha, which is only that you did, we can be more lenient. That's why this analysis is relevant. And this analysis, understanding, assumes when the Gemara says, Lo shepa'ua do'chaita hi, what does it mean? It means do'chaita. It means it's biblical, it's pentateuchal. Right? It comes from the Torah. Let me now give you a totally different interpretation. There are two perushim of Rashi. The first perush reads as follows. Let's read. Mi davdina lahachi lenavla. Since, go back to this Rashi. Since we act in this fashion in order to embarrass her, mida kenega mida, we're reenacting, kamosha, stavit, naota, balek, like just as she did to act in front of her lover, mechlal dasar. So here we say it's usher, it's biblically forbidden. Inami, alternatively, midichtiv ufaha, since it says that she and we, the Kohen, have covered her hair, mechlal, we're three lines from that bottom of the Rashi, mechlal, from here we see, she at that moment wasn't with her hair cut, uncovered. Shemamina, from this we can derive, it was not the wont, it was not the custom, it was not the way of Jewish women to go with their hair covered, uncovered. The chen ikra, that's the interpretation. What does that tell me? It's a min. I've actually learned the words. Perhaps I've learned it even more literally than Rav Moshe Feinstein learns it. that all we can learn, says Rashi, is that Jewish women covered their hair. Not that the Torah says, does the Torah say that she has to, does the Torah anywhere say that you have to cover your hair? Do any of the counters of the mitzvot count covering your hair as one of the 613 mitzvot? No. It's not a mitzvah. All we can learn from this, according to the interpretation I gave you, which was, is the interpretation which we've seen in several poskim who dealt with the question of Kisur Seir, and which is explicitly said in a public lecture by Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, as the tradition in many Yeki communities, in many Litvish communities, and where it explained where it came from that women didn't cover their hair. What was the justification? What was the halachic justification? The halachic justification is from the fact that all we can learn from this is that Jewish women covered their hair. It's a custom recorded in the Torah. It may be applauded in the Torah. But a custom is only a custom. And then as we move to the 1800s, we begin seeing responsive literature, which talks about how the women in Europe are no goodniks and they stop covering their hair. And we went through a whole variety of tshuvot, and they dealt with the question of Seir Bisha Erva, and they dealt with the question of Farah Shisha, and they said, well, it's a custom, but the custom is now lost. The custom is lost. Now, we had this discussion just before. A custom being lost, it doesn't mean that you're allowed to lose the custom. But at some point, it was lost. We have hundreds of customs mentioned in the Gemara, which we don't do. Customs of Avelut, customs of mourning, customs of a whole variety. How we light Hanukkah candles. How we read the Torah. What parshas we read the Torah. We know all this. We know that there are customs that were lost. This is not a carte blanche to change customs. But there may were generations where they didn't do it. The custom was lost. Okay. So according to the way Rav Aaron Soloveitchik learns the Gemara, the custom, the fact that a woman has to cover her hair is a custom. So now you're going to ask me, if it's only a custom, why does the Gemara call it Dohaita? Why does the Gemara call it Dohaita? Why does the Mishnah call it Dat Moshe? Okay. On the use of the word Dat Moshe, let me just read you again what I read you from the Meiri. You're correct. The Gemara's question was, why did you include that under Dat Moshe? Under Dat you did. It should have been under Dat Moshe. That's the Gemara's question. So I read you what we said. We said the Meiri says that Dat Moshe nemar al mitzvot haketuvot b'Torah, o haremuzot ba, or hinted to it. Now, why did the Meiri have to say that? Because, again, it doesn't have to necessarily be commanded in the Torah, but it's recorded in the Torah, it's hinted to the Torah. Let me give you a classic example. I don't know when you got married, when you really listened to what's written in the Ketubah, but it says that you get a certain sum of money, the chazichi lichi midoraita, which comes to you, depends on the situation, that you deserve 100 zuz that you get from the Torah. Now, we hold the ketubah's drabbana, rabbinic in origin. So how can every ketubah written says that you deserve midoraita? The answer is because ketubah is hinted to in the Torah. It says that if he says he has to give her what all the girls get. Right? It says it talks about a case of a rape, and he talks about how he has to treat her, how he has to act her, and it says he has to make sure that he treats her like he's another girl. It says he's got to make sure she gets the ketubah like everybody else gets. The verse says, this doesn't mean that ketubah is the right. The Torah is merely according to the custom of ketubah. That was at that time. Ketubah goes back, it's Akkadian, it's Ugaritic. Sources go back to early Babylon that women had ketubah. It's not, the rabbis came along and instituted it. But it's recorded in the Torah, there's such a thing as a ketubah. That's what it means, the chazichi li melichi midorait, that you deserve biblically. Because the ketubah itself has sources in the Torah, even the Torah never commanded anywhere to write a ketubah. So, the word, use of the word do'oraita, and there, this is not the only case. There are many cases where the do'oraita doesn't mean it's biblically commanded, but has a biblical source, a biblical niche. Yes?
Is that, she wants to say a hierarchy, a mishnah, then a biblical remez, and then a minhag, or a minhag and biblical remez is the same thing?
A biblical custom is a
custom. What?
Biblical custom is custom. Look, the Gemara talks about the obligation to create the Torah. Right? And the Gemara learns that Moshe Rabbeinu, this is from the Pasuk, that Moshe instituted reading Kriyas HaTorah. Right? The Gemara says, but it's only the Torah. Because Moshe instituted. The fact it's recorded in the Torah doesn't, the fact that something is recorded in the Torah does not necessarily make it divine. The question is, where is the source from? Is the source divine, or is the source man, or is the source custom? Is the source custom?
Because it has biblical significance. Does it have any more validity mitzvah-wise? Let's say, oh, the regular minhag that came out without the mention of the
seems not. I would say the lack that has to do with your worldview, and I mean, with everything. I mean, the answer is, the Torah seems to record it, seems to be happy with it, but the Torah does not obligate it. Okay. Now, let me just say that Rashi and Chumash, okay? And let me point out to you that this interpretation essentially says that women and minimal covering is good enough. Biblically, according to this interpretation, biblically, a woman doesn't have to cover her hair at all. Nowadays, if there's no longer a custom, but it's not no longer trivial. Because the question is, what is the custom? Who determines it? Has the custom changed back? Would you say that more married women getting married now do cover their hair? And who do you measure by? Do you measure by religious women, or do you measure by women in general? These are not trivial questions.
Depends where you live, also what areas. Some areas just that everybody.
That could be in itself, right?
If you don't cover your hair, you're practically, you know, maybe stoned or something. I don't know.
But the point is that essentially what it says is, according to this interpretation, it depends what the custom is. What the custom is, you're right. It's a custom like anything else. This view, let me make it clear, is a minority view. I don't want anybody to say that I misled you. This is a minority view. But it is a legitimate halachic position for which major poskim, respectable poskim, explained, referred to, and accepted as a position. Rashi in the that's the one who's in Chicago. That's the Shaber's younger brother. So not biblical. That's the word doraita means a custom minhag oraita. Custom of the Torah. Right. Now there is you have to understand that this interpretation turns on the word explanation of the word derech. She'in derech. Now, when I translate it for you, I translate the way Rav Soloveitchik told me to translate it, which is not the custom. So this back now comes. How do the rabbis use the word derech, right? And in this discussion, for instance, there are those who want to refute this position by saying, in the famous Medrash with Nomi and Rut, Nomi says as follows, "Tomer Rut al tifgi'i." And that verse, Rut says, it goes on, "Amra la biti." So what did Nomi say to her? "Biti ein derech shel Yisrael ledur bevayit she'ein sham mezuzah." It's not the derech, like the custom, the wealth of Jews to live in a house that doesn't live in a Mexico, right? Amra v'asher talini alini. So you see that, at least from that source, he would say that you can't learn from derech. Derech doesn't necessarily mean that it's a custom. Okay. But Soloveitchik also wants to prove from Rashi. Rashi says that on the Chumash, on the Farah Rosh Hashanah, the way Rashi quotes this Gemara here, he says, Mikan lebnot Yisrael shegilui rosh ginai lahem. It's a shame to them. He doesn't say it's a sur. He says it's not proper. It's a ganayla. Rav Uziel, okay? Rav Chaim Uziel, chief rabbi, says, you know why it's a ganayla? Because it's usur. I mean, you can learn the text this way. Okay. Again, so the majority of posts hold that the obligation for women to cover hair is biblical. How much? A minimal covering, but you gotta cover your hair. There is a minority opinion that holds the origin of women covering her hair is merely custom. Somewhere in the 1800s, there was a mass movement away from women covering hairs, particularly in Europe, and the custom was lost. As many of the posts we actually read, we responded to, which seemed to imply that only the flints of Ebbetsons actually covered their hair. And I know that that was clearly true in the 1920s and 30s when my grandfather of Shalom was a rabbi in Chicago, that his wife wore a shirt of their hair covered. None of the other women covered their hair. It just wasn't the quality. Okay. Let's talk now about that. Yes.
Can I
start
by now with the fact that this
is
for women to
put
their hair when they're going to shul,
but
not generally?
I talked about this. I think the women covering their hair in shul. Rav Kook Zatzal has this argument that because of the sanctity of synagogue, women were very careful to do things they didn't normally do. I think there's a truth in that. That is, women somehow felt that the coming to shul requires greater modesty. Right? Women who don't normally wear slacks during the middle of the week, when they come to shul, they're careful to wear dresses. Women who normally don't cover their hair, or go sleeveless, when they come to shul, they dress more modestly. So I don't think that you can prove anything on that. I also think that when it comes to covering their hair, there's a separate obligation to cover your hair when you're not. And I'll get into that a little bit later. That may add to it. We talked about this. Why women cover their hair when they go to the mikveh, when they're totally naked, and that's just, there's a simple obligation to cover your hair when you make brachos. Okay. What about dat yehudi? Well, dat yehudi requires one to cover more. The Rambam says, I don't know if you actually saw this picture, let me just, you can look at it. This is a woman wearing a traditional veil from the Arab Emirates. You can pass it around. It's essentially a veil which had places for the eyes so you can see out and cover the mouth and cover the face.
You see them in Turkey.
You see them in Turkey. It's a redid.
It's considered.
For sure they're different. When they talk about a redid, is that not only is the hair covered, but there's an additional face veil which cover other parts of the body. Cover the face. Okay. Now, the prisha, by the way, this requirement that a married woman, when she walks out to the marketplace, wear a redid is quoted in the Rambam. Okay, that's not surprising, that's the 1000s. But it's in the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch was in the 1500s. Well, Prisha is living in the beginning of the 700s. He says, I haven't seen redid in a long time. What happened to the redid? I don't see redid. No, nobody wears redid. Says the Prisha, this proves that a redid, which is Dat Yehudit, the concept of Dat Yehudit is a relative concept. The Dat Yehudit is the customs of the daughters of Israel, customs of modesty. They have no source in the Torah. These are just what Jewish women decided to do. And Jewish women sometimes decided not to wear a redid. They stopped wearing redids. Maybe they were influenced by the general culture, and they stopped wearing redid. Is the picture still floating around? Yes. So,
did you come across anybody who said, you know,
that you're obligated to wear redid? No. I did see other people say, there are people, Rabbi Nachum Moshe Klein, clearly seems to say there's no proof, because maybe the custom of redid was accepted such that it was relative. And he claims that there might be things elements in that you did when they were first accepted or accepted relative. But nowhere in Shulchan Aruch or in the Rambam does it say anything about the dad Yehudit is relative. I mean, this is clear extrapolation. The Prisha, who's one of the major pillars of Pesach, says it's a relative. You see that all dad Yehudit is relative. Because if it's a custom, and nobody disagrees with the fact that it's a custom, customs change. Okay? Now, I should point out that there are those who want to argue that the redid, the element of the redid is not that it has to be dafka, face cover, but that you have to have multiple coverings on the head. That the kamta, a simple covering, is not enough. That there has to be two coverings. And we'll come back to the idea of a double covering. If you know that even in the Sephardi community, they will say if you wear a shetel, you have to wear a shetel with a hat on top of the shetel. I'd just like to bring to your attention that this concept of a double covering first appears in the shetel battle. Until the shetel battles occurred, the shetel battles, in the 1600s, there were major shetel battles. Pro-shetel versus negative shetel. Right, against shetel. The response literature never before the 1600s ever mentioned the requirement for double covering. It seems it was part of the weaponry used against you. You want to wear shetel? All right, we'll you wear shetel, but you're going to wear it. All right. Okay, and let me now talk. Let's now talk about this requirement to cover your hair. I'm not talking about say or be share, but we'll come back. We'll mix everything together, one major jumble. But let's now just analyze. We're just looking at that motion that you do. Nothing about sexual distraction. Just that. Where is this obligation? Okay, let's go back to the Gemara again. Okay, we're now back to the Gemara, source 6, analyze it one step further. A little bit deeper. Okay, the Ezo again, we're going to start all over again. The Ezo, page source 6, the line we've read for about 5 times. One more time. The Ezo, he dat Yehudit, Yotzah the Rosh Perua. What's that? You need a woman to go through the hair uncovered. Rosh Perua, Doraiti, the Gemara says, what do you mean it's only dat Yehudit? It's a custom. Rosh HaPerua is biblical. Dichtiv ufara Rosh HaIsha. V'tanet v'Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Shmuel, Hasan Rabbi Shmuel said, as hara l'vino Yisrael shalo yitzah before Rosh, the Jewish should go with the hair uncovered. Jewish daughter. The verse is, Doraita, biblically, turn the page. Biblically, Kalta shaperdom. Kalta is good enough. Some minimal covering is good enough. That you did, that's to fulfill the requirements of the customs of modesty of Jewish daughters. I feel kilted kalta now, master. Kalta is not enough. You have to go with your head completely covered, with whatever the custom dictates of covering. Yes? Because I think there's a greater chiddush, because that Moshe does not grounds for, maybe she goes with it, because as far as that Moshe does not grounds for divorce to show your hair.
Wait,
a woman who walks out with her hair partially covered, okay, partially covered, that's that Moshe, she hasn't violated that Moshe. The Gemara wants to tell you that she goes with her hair partially uncovered, since she's violated that you did. And it's grounds for divorce.
But she gets totally uncovered.
Yeah, but that's not because, yeah, that'll, it's correct, but I don't even need that. I need, even if she's partially uncovered. Suppose she wears a hat and her hair is partially showing. Is that grounds for divorce? The answer is yes. Okay? And in that system, okay? We know that things have changed since then, right? But according to that system, yes. But this is the world of women covered their hair completely. Yes.
Okay.
I managed to completely confuse
it. Under the whatever definition the right to be a bina minha, the right, and not the right.
Right.
Then how do we explain kalta?
As far as the biblical custom is concerned, kalta is
biblical different. Custom, okay. So you just change the word obligation to custom.
An obligation based on custom. One is obligation based on divine will, and the other is custom based on custom. It doesn't make it any less of an obligation, it just makes it more mutable.
No, it just explains that.
Changeable. That's the difference. Okay. You know, Jews are very, very careful about custom, generally speaking. In fact, the famous joke is that instead of saying in the Torah, lo tignov, lo tigzov, the Ramah should have written somewhere in Chosh Mishpat, v'yesh nohagim lo lignov. Right? And that would have been the end of it. Jews wouldn't even have thought about all sorts of interesting things. Okay? Jews are very careful about that. Okay. So now let's continue. Okay? So it says, Kalta Shakta Dummy, that Yudhi Dakilu Kalta Jamias. Now Gemara goes on to the next line. Amar Rav Asi, Rav Asi came along with something. Amar Rav Yochanan, in the name of Rav Yochanan. Kalta Enba Mikshum Puat Osh. Rav Yochanan says, Rav Asi, Rav Yochanan, great Rav Yochanan, first generation of the Amorai, told us that if a woman walks out wearing a Kalta, no problem. She's okay. Habibah Rav Zera. In Yiddish they say dings. He didn't understand. He struggled with it. What is Rav Yochanan coming to teach me? What is he talking about? Hey, where? Fourth one. Ilema Bashuk. If Rav Yochanan comes to tell me the what? A woman who walks out into the marketplace with a kalta shopping, that's good. Is that possible? That you did she? If a woman walks out of the kalta, we just said that what? That she's got to wear the whole shebang. Kalta's not good enough. Ve'ella b'chatzer, so what are you going to come and tell me? No. That a woman wears a kalta in her private backyard, that's okay. You mean to tell me, says the Gemara, that she's got to wear a hair covered in a private backyard? In Cain, if that's the case, lo inachta bat l'Avram Avinu shir shevet tapet balach. If you mean to tell me, Rabbi Yochanan, that every Jewish woman, if she walks out to hang up the laundry in a backyard, her open repeset, or whatever it is, private backyard, she's got to wear something on her head, in Cain you have to divorce all Jewish women. In Cain, lo inachta bat l'Avram Avinu, you won't leave one daughter of Avram, one Jewish woman, she is Sheva Tapit Balada, will continue to be married to her husband. Because every woman, Jewish woman, even the frumpsty of the frumpsties, don't cover their hair when they hang out the laundry in the private backyards. Okay, we're right now approximately 400 of the common era. Before the Hungarians ever appeared on the scene. Okay? So he says, what is Rabbi Yochanan talking about? Rabbi Yochanan says, Kalta is good enough. If it's in the shuk, we know it's not good enough. And if it's in the chatzar, she's got to wear something? So what is he talking about? Amar Abaye, so Abaye says, V'item Rav Kana, and some say, well, Rav Kana, that she's running from one courtyard to another courtyard through a private, sort of a semi-public thoroughfare, an alleyway. Okay, now as I mentioned, I don't have a picture, but the point is that they used to have, you know, public thoroughfares, public domains, and between from public domain to the public, from major street to major street, they had alleyways. They were called mavoi, and from these alleyways, when it became courtyards around which there was a single house, or like several houses, and around a courtyard. In any case, so when she runs from one courtyard to the next courtyard, right through this semi-public thoroughfare, which anybody goes through these alleyways, then a kalta is good enough. She can wear a kalta, But that's all she has to say. That's what Rabbi Yochanan says. Now, let's look at Tosfot. Ve'ela b'chatzer. Okay, Tosfot, you see the right-hand side here? Ve'ela b'chatzer, with me? Ve'ela b'chatzer, Tosfot now is trying to explain, you mean to tell me that Rabbi Yochanan says that she's got to wear a kaftan b'chatzer? Could that be? So look how he says. Perish, afilu b'lo kaftan, nami ein mishum p'rosh, without a kaftan and completely exposed, is not puat rosh in a chatzer. She im lo kein, because if you don't say that, lo he not the bat Avraham Avinu, you won't have left any Jewish woman married. Look what he's done. What Tosfos is essentially saying. First of all, you have to appreciate. That's how I learned the Gemara. I learned more like Tosfos. That doesn't mean in the chatzer you don't have to wear anything. Chatzer you don't have to wear anything. We have a couple questions to ask about this, but. Chatzah certainly in your home. You walk around with nothing on. I mean, nothing like that in your hair.
But if someone walks into your
home. Don't ask smart questions. Okay? So we see. First of all, Rashi and Tosfot and Ron and the Ritva clearly hold. Interpretation of this Gemara, that in a chatzer, a private chatzer, a woman based on fara rosh isha does not have to wear her kaftan. If she goes into the marketplace, she's got to wear the whole shebang. Does it make a difference if somebody's there or not? No. The fact that you walk into a public thoroughfare, even if it's Rambam that I read. The Rambam says, when describing the Sotah service, she stands in the Beit HaMikdash, v'hi umedet b'neihem, b'lo medid, u'b'lo medpachat, ela b'gadel, with her clothing on, v'kipa an rosha, and her cap on her head, k'vo sh'isha b'toch b'ita. Like a woman stays in her house. Now, from this Rambam, it would seem that a woman does wear something on her head in her house. Right? That a woman wears something on her head in the house. Now, based on this Rambam, the Bach and the Chatam Sofer and many other want to say that a woman, even in her house, even in her chatzer, has to wear something. Okay? Now, as a result of that, they're going to have to be forced to learn our Gemara a little bit differently, right? Because the Gemara seems to, what does the Gemara say? Ve'ela, what? Let's go back to the Gemara. Ve'ela b'chatzer, right? So Rabbi Yochanan, who says that b'did is enough, is referring to the chatzer, im kein lo hinachta bat Avraham Avinu. Now we say that if Rabbi Yochanan requires a woman to wear something on her head in the chaser, then you'll have to divorce, will be led to divorcing all Jewish women. The Bach, based on the Rambam, says no. A woman's got to cut her hair in the house too. She doesn't cover all her hair. She got to cover some of her hair. And what the Gemara seems to, what must be saying is, but if in the chaser, but if Rabbi Yochanan is not right, that means this is the El of the chaser. So Rabbi Yochanan must be referring to the chaser. That a did is that a kalta is enough. Ve'ela b'chatzer, that's not a question. Ve'ela b'chatzer, because if she would have to wear more than a kalta, if she would have to wear more than a kalta in Kano, enough. So the ela b'chatzer, not Rashi, ela b'chatzer. But you mean to tell me that Yom talking about chatzer? It's a question. Ve'ela b'chatzer. That's the case, then everybody has to, then she has to wear something that led to divorce. So Rambam doesn't look divorce. Says the Bach, Rambam doesn't look divorce that way. Gemara says, Gala b'chatzer. Rabbi Yochanan about chatzer, which means in the chatzer, You do have to wear a tzitzit. Now, it has to wear a collar. How does the Gemara continue? Because if she would have to wear more than that, in Kelo Hinach the Batla Ramavino. Now, that's how they learn Pshat the Rambam. It's not the way after Pshat the Rambam could say, because that's how a woman, you know, if a woman comes in, I don't know, I catch my wife all the time in the house wearing her hat. I say, why do you wear the hat? She says, to take it off, and I put it back out, and then I get dressed in the morning, I put on my temple, put on my hat, that's it, I'll leave it on. I get dressed, take it on, and the same thing may be true. A woman comes home, she has this cap which holds her hair together. That's how she stands in the house. I mean, every time she'll walk around with the veil on in her house. She comes home, she takes off the babushta, she takes off, she leaves the cap on with her hair, she doesn't undo her hair. That's what the Rambam means. That's how she leaves standing in her house. Not because she's obligated. I don't want to get into that, but there are other ways of learning the Rambam. Besides, the Chatam Sofer is very, Chatam Sofer literally requires a woman to have her hair covered in the house, which is part of the stringency that the Hungarian, based on the Chatam Sofer, the Hungarian postal general will require women to cover their hair in the house. And he quotes the famous Gemara of Kimchit. The Gemara says, by Kimchit, why did you deserve to have seven sons who were Kohanim Gedolim? The Gemara says, because the walls of my house never saw. And the Zohar offers extremely, extremely strict on women's uncovering their hands. So the Moshe Feinstein, I was debating with myself to learn to the tshuva. It's a very long tshuva, but I decided not to. The Moshe Feinstein says it very simple. Which he brought down the ire of the Hungarian community with this tshuva. Literally the ire. I should say fire, but it's number one. Zohar, he says. Zohar, we only accept if it doesn't contradict Gemara's. But our Gemara says that a Jewish woman can walk around in her house with her hair uncovered. Rashi says it, Tosaf says it. The only one who might say not that way is the Rambam. And in the Rambam, there are other interpretations. But I have 4, 5, 6 Rishonim who explicitly say, and we said the Tosaf, that in your private home you can walk with your hair uncovered. You have a problematic Rambam. I go with the sure 5, but not with the questionable Rambam. And the Gemara says, though he knocked the batla Rambam in the shabbat, and you can go with your hair uncovered in your chatzar, certainly in your house. That's as far as the Zohar. When the Zohar contradicts halacha, you don't listen to the Zohar. 1. 2, he says, Chatam Sofer wants to bring a proof from Kimchit. The proof Kimchit proves the exact opposite. The Gemara says, Kimchit, what did you do that was so exceptional that nobody else did? It proves exactly the opposite. You want to be righteous? Then be righteous. Right, then we should impose upon Jewish women who don't want to cover their hair. They should have to cover their hair when they're not obligated to. The Gemara says so. The Kimchi proves it that you're not obligated to. So based on that, she says the prophecy of her home, she doesn't have to cover her. Moshe Feinstein said. There's a book that came out about 15 years ago. It's called Ma'ane L'Igrot. Moshe Feinstein wrote these, called the Igrot Moshe. He wrote a book called An Answer to the Igrot. It's written in the same exact print, same exact page format. Oh, we have a picture of it. I brought a tube of it. I'll tell you what it looks like. Yeah, turn to source number 24. I actually brought you something from it. I don't know if you're not used to, I may not be used to seeing what the Moshe Feinstein's tshuvos look like. It's the same paper, it's the same print, it's the same publisher, it's the same everything, layout, format. He merely copied page 20 and page 24. It looks like this, exactly like the Moshe Feinstein's tshuvos. He published this book as a response to prove, it says, how did Moshe Feinstein have the chutzpah to disagree with the classic poskim, like Rav Sofer and Rav Yehuda. Rav Moshe wasn't it? I mean, that's what Moshe is one of. Is a, you know, he's a the first leaguer. I mean, he can disagree with anybody he wants to. Certainly, if they're Aproni. So that was, and I said he, and this represents the Hungarian school. They were really quite upset with Moshe Feinstein. We're not going to read this to you. I think his name is Horowitz. I don't know. I met his son. His son's a chemist. I met him at a conference. It's true. I met him at a conference. He came over to me because I was the only guy wearing a besides him, he was wearing a black kippah. I didn't know that I was wearing a nice kippah, sluga. And he asked me, where are you eating? I said, I brought kosher TV dinners with me. So he shared a kosher TV dinner with me. So, and we sat together, and he told me how his father went through it, and his father's anger with Moshe Feinstein, and how he had a chutzpah to disagree with all these Hungarian poskim, et cetera, et cetera. And Moshe Feinstein wasn't intimidated. Okay. Now, so as far as the, back in Gemara, so, page 6, back in Gemara. Page 7, you're back in Gemara. Okay. Now, what happens if she's in the privacy of her backyard, right? So she doesn't have to cover her hair, but the majority goes, well, she's in her home, and somebody comes in. Is she obligated to cover her hair? That's a difficult question. Why? Because at this particular point, we have the meshing of Seir B'She'erba, right? And Afara Rosh Isha. Because a woman's obligation, we know that as far as being in the chutzar is concerned, doesn't seem that you have to cover your hair. It's your private domain. You don't have to cover your hair. The obligation to cover your hair seems to be a sign of marriage. You can show, we saw as far as the Torah is concerned, you can show a lot of hair. Even according to the dat, according to the posting, in your privacy of your home, you can show hair as far as dat yudis is concerned. There's no dat yudis.
Then the shuk, even if there's no
one there,
you have to cover your hair.
That's correct.
So from that I would think that if you're in your private domain, even if someone comes in, you don't have to cover your hair.
That would seem to be that way.
On the place.
However, as soon as somebody walks in, it would seem now that we have a problem of, say, a Misha Erba, which is the general prohibition of a woman being dressed in front of a man in a modest fashion.
Do we have to
stare at
the
adult? Wait. Makes sense. No, it
doesn't
make sense. You know the woman.
Yeah,
because
if you don't know if she's married or not. But she knows
she's married.
Yeah, but here she's not doing it for herself. She doesn't have the obligation.
No, she's not supposed to be dressed in the fashion since her modest fashion. But wait a second, do you understand? Now, this idea that there are two different halachot that mesh is very problematic. Now, because we have to deal with a whole bunch of things that we've learned. Because it depends. Okay, let me just go one more minute. There do seem to be some sources that would suggest that simply based on concept of that Moshe, that the law only that this idea that you if there's somebody in the private courtyard, you have to cover your head. That these rules apply about if there's nobody there. The Ritva says something. Let me show you what the Ritva says. The Ritva is in the 1400s. Vim came. Rosh. This is nobody who sees. Suggested that if there was somebody there who could see, she would not be allowed to come. Okay? And the Prisha says, V'yeshlama b'dochak, d'ohad d'mutra haynu k'she'en sham ish. Or the Tal says, V'im darim sham anashim acherim gam kein, de'en bo heter ki'im b'kalta. She's got to wear a kalta. Okay. Now, that seems to be, there are those poskim. When I talked to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein about this, I didn't actually talk to her. I talked to my brother Dov. Rav Aaron was not convinced. Rav Aaron said that he didn't think these sources required, that they may be coming in from Seir B'She'erba. Now, let me tell you what bothers me. Okay? Ah, Seir B'She'erba. their shot. Go to the solution of the children. Well, let's see what happens when we mesh the two together. A woman, okay, let's now go that a woman in the privacy of her home does not have to cover her hair. Okay? Man comes in. So we say, Sarah B. Sheridan. Okay? Sarah B. Sheridan. But Sarah B. Sheridan, absolute or relative. Now we get into the question of, do we hold absolute sneer or relative sneer? Because if you hold absolute sneer, yes, she can't cover her hair because of Sarah B. Sheridan. But if it's based, if we hold relative sneer, and you say that society at large, it's not considered sexually distracting because men are used to seeing most women in the community go and who are considered modest, not talking about immodest, walk around with their hair uncovered, then a woman, the man coming in, she's not acting immodestly. She hold relative sneer, she would not have to cover. But if we said that that motion requires a woman to cover her hair minimally when there's another man around, and that motion, she's got to cover her hair. So that really does make a difference how you analyze it, because they're two separate obligations. Now the idea of viewing it as two separate obligations, the Chafetz Chaim writes, the Chafetz Chaim writes about, has a lengthy discussion about Kisui Seir. He's very machmir, but he breaks it down to two elements, and he makes it very clear that you have to deal with it separately. One is a farah or sheisha, and then a seir b'she'er va, and they have different rules and different obligations. There are women who will cover their hair when they leave the house, but in their house they'll cover their hair. Would you do me a favor? Would you turn off the tape for a second?
The rationale that I was told was that in the public, you cover your hair because you're spoken for, you're taken.
What's the symbolism of marriage?
This is you. And inside, in other words, not the difference between Sarah
Bishai. No, because you obviously would hold this here that Sarah Bishai is a relative concept. And since, but Chazal, part of that analysis, we saw a lot of posts can hold that she's done. I agree, it's still not the party line. It's not yet. It's still not, it's in the yeshiva system, they don't teach it, but we saw it's in the poskim, it is a bona fide position. The Chazal are asking sexual distraction. Hair is not sexually distracting. And that's what the Seir B'Sheir Eva goes by. Okay?
It's becoming a lot more mainstream.
I don't deny it. But let me ask you a question. This is something that I have no straight answer. Jewish women, let's say that now Jewish women now more and more are covering their hair. Does that now make it a custom to cover the hair based on that you did or because of Seir B'Sheir? It seems to me, and I'm just talking off the top of my head without careful analysis, it seems to me that if you will convince me that the vast majority of young women getting married now cover their hair, that is Dat Yudit. Now Dat Yudit now is that Jewish women cover their hair, it's a sign of modesty, okay. But if they would walk but those women walk with their hair uncovered, that's not pritzut. It's not a problem of Seir B'Sheir, but because the majority of women who you walk in the street, it's not such a distracting because the world around you, women walk with their hair uncovered. Majority of Jewish women don't walk with their hair uncovered. Now, again, we have to ask, who determines Dat Yudit? Jewish women at large, modest Jewish women at large, whether they're from or not from, or from women. Because all you'll be able to convince me is that, yes, young, modern Jewish women, modern, cover their hair. But that doesn't mean the majority of Jewish women cover their hair. And how do we determine that you did? It seems we go by what modest Jewish women are doing. It doesn't mean the frummies. And we saw that in the back. I admit that I can't give you a good acid test, but it seems pretty clear to me that I don't think that there's a problem of Seir. If we hold relative smooth, I don't think that there's a real problem of Seir B'Sheir, but because it's not such a distracting de facto. Okay. let me just see what I have left. Yes. Okay, we have, okay, I have two more minutes, and I want to discuss, next week we'll do a very interesting tshuva about Shekel. Let me just mention a couple of things. The Hungarian custom that the woman cuts her hair, shears her head to before she gets married. I should point out that the Litvish Poskim were adamantly against it. Almost as they said, adamant as the Hungarians were for it. They felt that it was also midoraita because of the Tilbash. Only men get crew cuts, not women. And they felt that it was also, the Hungarians said, well, that's new. It's all right. But Litvish Poskim are very much against it. They say that a woman's supposed to look beautiful for her husband, and this is doing the exact opposite. And this is not halachic, it's just not the way halacha works. And they were very, very adamant against it. They claim that the Zohar is very strict about any hair showing, and maybe her hair will, when she goes to the mikvah, the hair will come up, and it's too long. But the Litvish Poskim were very much against it. As far as kala, covering her hair, she's a married woman. I mean, certainly after the chuppah, she's got some Hungarians do cover their hair, right? The Hungarian women do. In fact, the truth is, Esther and I were once in a chasna where the kala never came out because the shekel didn't fit properly. But it was a true story. However, the majority of poskim, certainly in the non-Hungarian, the Litvish world, say that there's a Gemara that says that if you saw a woman walking out on her wedding day with her hinuma, her veil, that's a sign that her ketubah matayim. She comes and claims, I lost my ketubah, and my husband divorced me, I'm going to have 200 zuz. And the Gemara says, if you saw her walking out with a veil, you know that she was married, that she was married. It's a sign, and the Gemara seemed to imply there that that's how she dressed with her hair was covered, and she was considered married. And that the Gemara claims that she's really not obligated to cover her hair until the first sexual relations. First sexual relations, that's when she's got to cover her hair. All night, at the dinner party, that she can walk her hair. All right, we'll stop here, and next week we'll read one fascinating tshuva from Moshe Feinstein about paying the chayit. You know what? Just give me 30 seconds more. I just forgot something because I don't want to go back to reading the Gemara one more time. Suppose you're in somebody else's courtyard. There's a woman have to cover her hair and she's somebody else's courtyard. Somebody goes to somebody else's house. What does the Gemara say? The Gemara says that she's got to wear a kalta. She doesn't have to wear anything in her chatzer. But she has to wear a kalta if she goes mechatzer lechatzer derech mavoi. It would seem that who's the second chatzer, right? Who's the second chatzer? One could argue maybe it's somebody else's chatzer, but one could argue no, it's her chatzer. She's going from her chatzer derech mavoi. No clear proof. My brother Dov wanted to argue, discuss the Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. Rav Aaron said, I couldn't say that. But he could also not say that. I mean, that's an interesting point. I mean, it's not clear. It's an interesting question. Because if the element is what? That what requires the hair covering? Being in a semi-private area, but I'm not in a semi-private area. I'm not even if it's semi-private, semi-public, like the mother, I gotta cover my hair. Sure, completely public. But if I'm in a private area, I don't have to cover my hair. Okay? Again, there are many women who, when they come into a private house, they go for the hair. The question now, I had a shiloh recently about if you're in your office. A woman comes into her office. So that's now a Yerushalmi. Okay, we've sort of left it with Bradley. The Gemara Yerushalmi says, there are private areas that are public, and there are private areas that are public. You know, the public thoroughfare is like the library. It's really a private area, but it's pretty public. So an office is considered, you know, when the post can deal with the question of what about an office, the people coming in and out, even though it's a private area, it's considered, it would seem to be that it's more, that it's, that the woman would have to cover her, even though it's more of a private. All right.
Thank you, Ronnie.